Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem and welcome back to today's Daf HaYomi Nedarim and Pehei. We are holding on Pedal Dam Rebeis towards the bottom. Let's back up to the beginning of this section here. So it's nine lines from the bottom of Pedal Dam Rebeis. Back to the Mishnah where we have a fellow who says, look, no Kohanim or Levim can benefit from my produce. I'm a farmer. Don't want anybody to take anything from me. So the Mishnah says, well, it's not up to him. Yitlu al karchai. The Torah established, you know, the Truma and Maaser system. It's in place regardless of his wishes. So this halacha would indicate to us, would seem to indicate that when a farmer actually gives away that portion of Truma and Maaser, he's not giving his. You see, it's not a personal gift going from him to the Kohen. It's what we call Tivas Hanoa, that sort of financial stake that, theoretically somebody can, you know, give him a little tip to give this Truma to a certain Kohen. A Yisrael grandfather can tip off the farmer, here, look, I have a grandson who can use this Truma. Here's a little tip, a little bonus. This idea of a favor, this tivas hanoa, this control, this potential benefit that you can get from owning the Truma and Maaser, that's what's called tivas hanoa. Is that substantial? Is that an indication of some partial ownership in the Truma and Maaser? That's a sugi that we're going to learn today. It's mashma. It would seem from the Mishnah that we don't reckon with that. It's not significant. It's not substantial. It doesn't really constitute ownership. The fact is, even if he made a neder against Kohanim and Levim, they can still go ahead and take the Truma and Maaser. Okay, so let's start the Gemara. Kohanim and Levim nan and li yitu al karchai alma. It appears from this halacha that tevas hanoa, this idea is not substantial enough. It's not considered ownership. Eino mamay. We don't deem it as, having financial, value, so to speak. And therefore, when the kohen takes it baal karcha against his will, there's no issue. He's not taking directly from the farmer. It's Hashem's gift to the kohen, right? Eino sefer. But here comes the next part of the Mishnah, which seems to tell us just the opposite. Kohanim elu, ulevim elu nehen and li. A farmer gets up and says, you know, I don't like this kohen, I don't like this levi. They can't have enough from me. Specific, people. We have to listen. We have to follow. Yitlu acherim. Others can come take, but not these specific people. Why? Because they are mudar hana'a from him. Aval lahani loy. But these fellows can't take Truma and Maaser. Why? Because they are accepting from him. What are they accepting? Truma and Maaser. But it's not his. Oh, Tevas Hanoa is his. He has a financial stake. He's a part owner. Alma Tevas Hanoa Mamin. It is his Mamin. And therefore constitutes a direct gift from him to them. And therefore it's also, we seem to have a steer within the Mishnah. How to define Tevas Hanoa? Does a farmer have a partial ownership in his Truma, in his Maaser, in which case when he gives it, it's a direct gift from him to the Kohen? Or is it something which he's merely abandoning? It's Hashem's gift to the Kohen. The Reshit sounds like Tevas Hanoa is not Mamin, and then it sounds like it is Mamin. How do we reconcile this apparent contradiction about of Oishel or Kasha? The answer is two different Shitas. Ha Rebbe, Rabbi holds Tevas Hanoa is ownership. Rabbi Yosi ber Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. The Sanya Hagoynev Tivloi Shel Chaveri. A thief walks up to the farm, swipes the granary, the kri, with all the tevel. So the Truman Maaser is as yet unseparated, right? He steals the tevel, eats it. How much does he have to pay back? Does he have to compensate for everything, including the potential Truma and Maaser element within the kri, or does he just pay for the chulin aspect of the grain? which was really the only thing, you know, owned by the farmer. The other party had to give away regardless. That's machlekes. We have two shittas. Mesham loy d'mei tiv loy d'rei Rabbi. Rabbi says pay the whole thing, 100%, including the truma and maser element within that mix. The farmer owned that. He had that toives hanoah interest. Even in the truma and the maser, it identifies with the farmer. It's his. You've stolen it from him, pay it back. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Doimer, no. Skip the truma and the maser. It didn't belong to the farmer to begin with. You pay, but only, you know, 80-90% of the total amount. You can deduct truma and the maser, which in any case never really belonged to the farmer. It wasn't meant for him. It was meant for the kohen. And the fact that he had that toivas hanoah interest, that's not considered ownership. My la bokamifliki. Apparently, this is the very machlekes here. The Rebbe Savar, Rebbe who holds that you pay back 100% of what you took, including the Truma and the Maser aspect within that. He holds Toivas Hano Mamin. It was owned by the farmer. For Rebbe Yisrael Brida Savar, Toivas Hano Eino Mamin. And therefore you don't pay for the Truma and the Maser you took. Says the Gemara, not so quick. Loi, perhaps not. Let's interpret the price differently. The Kuli Alma Toivas Hano Eino Mamin. Perhaps all would agree it doesn't constitute ownership. It's not balas. It's not real mumming. So what then is the machlekes? Ella, hach, b'matana is shaloi hurmu kamifliki. You see, there are two ways to look at unseparated truma and maser. It's called matanais, potential gifts to the kohen, shaloi hurmu, which were not yet separated. Shall we say, look, at this point, everything in this pile, 100% of it belongs to the farmer. Notwithstanding the fact that there is some potential truma and potential maser lying in there, it's still premature. It's not yet truma. It's not yet maser. At this point, it is owned 100% by the farmer. Or we can say, look, let's be realistic about this. Ultimately, there is truma and maser in this pile, which is about to be separated, which goes to the kohen, which doesn't belong to the farmer. The fact that the Torah stipulates that within, you know, this supply here, a certain percentage is destined, is earmarked for a kohen. That leads us to the conclusion that the farmer doesn't really own that part. We don't view him as a full owner on that part. That's the machlekes. Rebbe says, look, Matana is Truma and Maser. It's not yet here. It's on the drawing board. It's on the plans. But at this point, it's Tevel. It belongs to the owner. Pay it back. 100%. Rabbi Yossi, Vida says no. After all, there is a part of this creed that's not going to stay in the hands of the farmer. It's meant for a kohen. And therefore, let's just view it already as though it's, you know, been separated. It's not meant to stay in the farmer's hands, and therefore you're not responsible to pay it back. That's the machlekes. But in terms of the Teves Hanoa issue, perhaps everybody, even Rebbe, would agree, you know, that's not called mamin. If you really have the truma here, you really have the maser here, it is no longer considered in the hands of the farmer. He's no longer an owner. Although he has some sort of, you know, fringe benefits from it, that's not considered ownership. The reason why in this price, Rebbe obligates the ganav to pay 100% is because we have not yet separated the truma and the maser. Matanei shaloi hurmu. And therefore, it's still at this early stage, still considered all owned by the owner. And therefore, you have to pay back 100% of what you took. Ask the Gemara 1 second. Let's try to analyze this, you know, a bit deeper. You can't separate the issues. If it is indeed true, as you are suggesting, that a farmer is not considered a partial owner of the truma and the maser, despite the fact that he has some potential fringe benefit that he receives from that truma and maser, it's not considered mamon. It's not considered ownership. It's just like ogoyrim to some sort of benefit. It's not a direct ownership on the truma. If that's the case, as you are suggesting. So ultimately, in this pile of wheat lies a percentage of truma on maser that the farmer will not have anything from it. So ultimately, you haven't taken that from him. I understand, it's still early in the game. It's not yet been, you know, identified and designated. But let's be realistic. In there lies, you know, some truma material on which he has no ownership, according to your suggestion. And therefore, vita vesana in a moment, mali hurma, what difference does it make whether it's been separated and therefore he doesn't own it once it's been designated as truma, umali shaloi hurma, or if it's not yet been designated? After all, there's a portion of this kri which is not meant for the owner. Why do you have to pay? What do you have to pay it back? You haven't taken anything from him. So this pshat doesn't work. Says the Gemara, Ella, rather, let me explain to you as follows. You know, I'll be honest, I'm not sure, says the Gemara, what Rebbe or Rabbi Yisrael Rida would hold in terms of this general question of Teves Hanoah. Perhaps they both hold it. It's yet considered mamon. Perhaps it's not considered mamon. That's not their machlokes. They're arguing about a side point. Ella haynu taima de Rebbe. Perhaps all would agree that Teves Hanoah is not mamon. Even Rebbe would agree as such. Haynu taima de Rebbe. The reason why Rebbe obligates the thief to pay back 100% of what he took, even the value of the truma, the master, haynu taima de Rebbe, kansua rabbanon leganav ki heichi deloy lignav. The special penalty applied to a ganav. Why are you stealing? Therefore, we obligate him to pay even more than he should technically be paying. You pay even for the truma, the master, even though technically you haven't really stolen that from the owner. It never really belonged to him. It's a knas. Or conversely, we could say, all shittas hold, Teves Hanoah is mamon. For Rabbi Yisrael Rida Sovereign, the reason why Rabbi Yisrael says you don't have to pay for the truma of the master. Sovereign, because he holds Kansur Rabbanon Lubala Bayis. Rabbanon applied a knas to the owner. What are you doing holding on to a tevel for this long? You're not meant to keep tevel in your house. Ki Yeche Delei Lishi Latibla said, people are discouraged from leaving tevel around long enough for them to be stolen. So perhaps, technically, Teves Hanoah is not really mamon. Truma, the master, doesn't really belong to the farmer. The reason why Rabbi Yisrael says pay back even the value of Truma, the master, it's a knas. Sorry, just the opposite, sorry. Perhaps everybody would agree, technically, Teves Hanoah is mamon, right? The reason why Rabbi Yisrael says you don't have to pay for the truma of the master, it's a knas against the balabai. So basically, we're having it both ways. We're not sure what they both hold. Initially, we figured the machlokes between the yeshitas is this exact point: is Teves Hanoah mamon? Is it not mamon? Now we're going back and saying that's not the machlokes. Maybe all agree it is considered mamon. Why don't you pay for the truma? A knas against the balabais. Or perhaps all agree, it's not mamon. Why do you pay for the truma according to Rebbe? A knas against the ganav. So this pshat didn't really work out, and let's refer back to our kasha in the Mishnah. We seem to have a contradiction in the Mishnah. On the one hand, we say a fellow gets up and makes a neder against Kohanim and Levim. In general, yitlu al karchon. They can access his truma. They can access his maser. Which led us to believe that Teves Hanoah is not mamon. And therefore it's not considered owned by the farmer. It's not considered a direct gift from him to the kohen. They can just take it. Then we say, well, when you specify, you identify certain kohanim and levim, they shouldn't take, then they can't. Why can't they? Oh, because they're taking from him. Teves Hanoah is mamon. We have that kash. Here comes another teretz. Rava Omar, you know what? Perhaps let's adopt the opinion. Let's go on the track of Teves Hanoah. Yes, mamon. That explains the second part of the Mishnah, right? These specific kohanim can't take from you because they're taking my money. What's left to be answered is the reisha. A general prohibition against all kohanim taking my truma, they have to listen. They don't have to, they could just take it. What do you mean? It's mine. Says Rav like this. I'll give you a novel answer to that question. Rav Amar Shani Truma Dahainu Taima Ditla Korcha, the reason why they can take it against Israel. Mishum the Truma Lo Yechazya Ala Kohanim. Let's face it. Who eats Truma? Only Kohanim. V'kivin the Ka'asi L'misra Alayim. What is this fellow getting up and saying? I want no Kohanim partaking in my Truma. Basically what you're doing is you're shutting the door. You're not allowing anybody to consume your Truma. The only candidate for consumption of Truma is a Kohen. You're not letting them. No Kohanim, right? So you're basically disabling your Truma. You're making it worthless. Shavya, you've turned it into Afar Ba'amah, just dirt, earth. You've turned it into a worthless entity. There are no customers. No consumers. And therefore, it's like you made it Hefker, says the Ran. Like, you know, Kol Chamira and Erev Pesach. We turn it into Afar Ba'amah. Has no worth, has no value. Has no use. So it's like Hefker. You've taken your ownership, your Tevas Hanah, and you've relinquished it. It's worthless. So you've let go of the Truma. So now, that allows others to take it. The whole point was, you have ownership, you have a Tevas Hanah, you've given up that Tevas Hanah. And therefore, the Kohanim can come take it. It's no longer yours. It doesn't identify with this fellow. And the Ran says, a chiddush. He says, Mehosham Inan. We learn from here that if a fellow takes his bananas and makes it usher on himself, others, he says, others can go and take it. It's hefker. You have no use from it. You have no ownership. You've given up all rights to these bananas. Chiddush. Okay, so bottom line is we seem to have a steer in the Mishnah. First teretz was, well, it's a machlekes. Whether Truma and Maser is owned by the farmer due to the Tevas Hana'a benefit. That's one sheet. The other sheet disagrees. And Rava says, no, all agree. Perhaps Tevas Hana'a is Mamin. So when I pinpoint, I identify certain Kehanim, you can't take my Truma, they have to listen. But if I make a general sweeping prohibition against all Kehanim taking my Truma, what I've done basically is disable the Truma. In which case, I turned it into Hefker. I let go of it. I relinquished any rights to the Truma. So that itself makes it mutter to the Kohanim. Continues the Mishnah, Kohanim She'enin Oysa Al Pi Abba. Here we have a wife getting up and saying, a nether against me doing anything for your father. I'm not going to cook for him, not going to benefit him. Al-Pi Abba is my father, Al-Pi Avicha your father, Al-Pi Achi. I'm not going to provide for my brother. Al-Pi Achicha offer your brother. Einoi Yachal HaFerim. These aren't considered, Einoi Nefesh. It's not depriving her, it's not getting in the way of their marriage. Husband cannot apply any Afara to this type of net. So it falls outside of those two categories of Einoi Nefesh or Beinoi Lebeino, right? What about She'enei Oiso Al Picha? Making a nether on anything that I produce is usher to you, my husband. Einoi Tzarech LaHafer. Tanakama says, forget about it. Don't even bother applying Afara. Why? The Ran brings because she's Meshubba to him. She's committed to cook and to bake and all that. As we learned in Ksubis, a whole list of chores that an Isha does. She brings in some income. That's prescribed in the Mishnah there. So that overrides her nether. It's not hers to make usher on him. Okay, that's Tanakama. Don't bother with hafar, it's unnecessary. Rabbi Kiva Omer Yafer. Keep in mind that, the basic amount that she has to do, that she cannot make usher. But, perhaps there's extra. Yafer, he has to do hafar. Hashem atadif alav yaseh min aroi loy. Remember, there's a whole list of specifications and requirements. the Ran brings chamesh mishkal chamesh sloim begol, a certain amount of income that she has to, you know, she has to bring into the family. But hadafa, more than that, is extra credit, in which case she's not meshuba to that, and that would be technically be in her control, in her hands, to make usher on him, and therefore he has to do afora to address any extra that she may bring in. Yafir shema tadif olav, she might bring extra, yosef min aroy loy, more than is coming to him. So according to Rabbi Akiva, ha'adafa, the extra, is really hers. Rabbi Yechim Nuri, I mean, no, he says ha'adafa is not really hers. And we learned this in Ksubos, we're speaking about a ha'adafa like the adchak, which requires extra effort, extra exertion. That extra work or income is really hers, according to Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Yechim Nuri says, no, even that belongs to him. And therefore he says, you can't just ignore it. Rabbi Yechim Nuri, I mean, yafer. The reason why he used to do afar is not because she might do hadafa. Hadafa, as we just said, belongs to him as well. But the reason why he should do hafara, shema yigarashena, because think long term. There might be a gerish, he might divorce her, but the hey asura olav, in which case she becomes asura at that point. You see, if he ever wants to take her back and remarry her, he can't. True, as long as they're married and she's bound to him and she's meshuba to him for this, you know, to bring in this income, she cannot stamp it with a nether. So don't worry about it. Even the hadafa is really his. Whatever she earns is his. But once he divorces, that's it. The nether snaps back into place. Right? Because, you know, she's no longer bound to him. He's not her husband. So once the nether snaps back, the nether becomes, the Maasi Yudayim become Asra. Now he can't take her back because anything she'll produce is Asra to him. So that's the reason for hafara. So we have three shittas regarding an isha who makes a nether koinam mashani isha al picha against her husband. Tanakama says, leave it alone. Eino yachal hafer, eino tzarach lafer, you don't have to do anything. Whatever she earns is his anyways. She can't make it asr. Rabbi Kiva says, the extra is an issue. Rabbi Yechmanir says, the extra is not an issue, but after divorce might be an issue. Amar Shmuel, halacha ki Rabbi Yechmanuri. A third shita, we are worried about after divorce. L'meima the kasavah Shmuel, the Shmuel really hold Adam Magdish Davash Leibal Olam. Keep in mind, this is not yet a situation that we're encountering. It's far off in the distance. It's Davash Leibal Olam. She's currently married. The fact that Shmuel is concerned with post-marriage, something which is not yet here, that's Davash Leibal Olam, would indicate that you can actually, you know, initiate an Isser or Hegdish or Koinam on something down the line in the future? Is that true? Ramini Vavakasha. We're going to have Shmuel himself who seems to hold otherwise. You can affect Isser. You can affect Hegdish on something which is currently here. But not on something which is as yet, you know, unborn. Hamag Ramini Hamagdish Masi De Ishtay. This is a case in the reverse. A husband applies hegdish on his wife's income. Okay? Harizu oisa v'echelas. No problem. She can produce and consume her income. And the Ran brings the Gemara Ksubas. According to one pshat, was speaking that he's not supporting her, so she has a right to access her income. Okay. So sugi and Ksubas, we're not going to get into it now, but bottom line is, Tanakama is not concerned about the, you know, basic income that she can just consume. It's hers. He has no right to make it us. So what about the extras? As we said before, there's, you know, an excess of her requirement. She's meant to produce a certain amount. What about the extra? Remember Hegdish. It becomes Hegdish. The Gemara Ksuz explains why. He has a right to make that also. Rabbi Yechon Sando Oy Mechulin. No. He says whatever she produces, whatever she earns, all her income is totally chulin, out of her husband's reach. Why? Says the Ran, the Svira lay the Ein Adam Magdish Davar Shalei Bala Olam. According to Rabbi Yechanan Sander, a person cannot apply Hegdish to something which doesn't yet exist. Her income is not yet here. V'amar Shmuel, and Shmuel himself, paskin like that. Halach Karechanan Sander. And how does Shmuel tell us? And our Sugya, be concerned about after Gerushin, oh, that might become us. It's not yet here. In fact, the Shmuel Pasul and Rabbi Chanan Sandor indicates that you can't be magdish something which is not yet here. So why is it that Shmuel and also give paskins like Rabbi Chanan ben Uri do the hafora because of after Gerushin? Well, after Gerushin is a world away. It's like Balaylam. Says the Gemara, perhaps we're misunderstanding Shmuel. Shmuel never concerned himself with something out in the future. Rather, he meant like this. You see, if we take a look back at the Mishnah, we have three shittas. Tanakama, who says, when Aisha makes a kainam, a nether, whatever I produce is usher to you, my husband, don't worry about it. It's all his. It's not in her hands to do that isher. Rabbi Kiva says, the extra is a concern. That's really hers. She's not obligated for that extra. It's hers. Rabbi Yechem Nuri says, I'm not concerned about the extra. So in that sense, he agrees to the Tanakama. Apparently, extra is also considered husband, so she can't really affect that. She can't make that also. But what I am concerned is about, you know, after divorce, in which case she's no longer under his care, and then the nether will snap back, right? So now when Shmuel says, I choose Rabbi Yechem Ben Nuri, what did he mean to say? Perhaps he was only addressing one aspect of what Rabbi Yechon was saying. I'm not concerned about, you know, after divorce. That's Davar Shalva Elohim, and Shmuel himself is never concerned with Davar Shalva Elohim, as we just proved from the other Gemara and Ksuvos. Rather, he was just trying to disagree with Rabbi Kiva, who said the excess income, the extra, the Hadafa, is rightfully hers to make usher on him. On that, I disagree. So in that aspect, I'm agreeing with the other shittas, whether it's the Tanakama or Rabbi Yechon ben Uri, who don't seem to be concerned about Hadafa. That's all he meant to say. V'chi teima. Ki ka'amar Allah Rabbi Yechon ben Uri. All Shmuel meant to say when he paskan like Rabbi Yechon ben Uri was Al Hadafa. Who the ka'amar? He meant to say that whatever she earns, even the extra, even, you know, above the required, you know, income of, you know, Api Chazal, even the extra, is still really considered his. And therefore, no hafara is required on that. It's his. That's all he meant to say. Well, if that's the case, then he should say it. Should say what he means. Lema halachah k'Rabbi Yechon ben Uri ba'adafa. That's all you should say, rather than issuing this blanket, you know, psak. I'm supporting Rabbi Yechon ben Uri, which indicates, which sounds like, it's referring to both aspects of Rabbi Yechon. Number one, that don't be concerned about hadafa currently while they're married, because it's his. And number two, do be concerned about the future income after divorce. Rather than saying it like that, which is sort of misleading, if he didn't mean that, he should just say halach k'Rabbi Yechon ben Uri beha'adaf. I pass on like Rabbi Yechon regarding that specific element of adaf, that, you know, the adaf also belongs to the husband. That's how he should say it. Otherwise, it's misleading. Or otherwise, he could have said halach k'Tanakama. Forget Rabbi Yechon ben Uri. That's confusing. I pass on like the Tanakama, who's not concerned about adaf. Inami, or he can say, you can say Aloch Kerba Kiva. Sorry, the Ran says Ein Aloch Kerba Kiva. Or you can say, you know what, I don't follow Rabbi Kiva, who's concerned about Adaf. I don't agree with that. There are so many different ways of saying it. Why did Shmuel choose to say it the way he did, which sounds like he's supporting Rabbi Yechon ben Uri all the way, even with respect to Davar Shalom Elohim after divorce? That's a kash. Ella Amar Rabbi Yosef. Truthfully speaking, Shmuel holds you cannot be magdish something which doesn't yet exist. But Shani Kainamis, Hegdish is one thing. Kainamis, Isser Nether, is totally different. It's a personal commitment. And that has a more liberal and broader application. Look, we find throughout Maseches Nedarim, Kainamas don't necessarily need to follow on the same track as Hekdesh. They don't have the same requirements. You see, Hekdesh entails taking an item and making it Hekdesh. It has to be here. It has to be real. It has to be owned. It has to be current. Kainam, Nedarim, it's a verbal obligation, a verbal commitment. It can apply to even something which isn't necessarily, you know, fully tangible in your hands right now. Like this. You see, I can take my peiros and make it asur on you. Something which doesn't work by Hekdesh. Right? By Hekdesh I can't, you know. I can't take... Sorry, by Kaidam, I'm taking Peres Chaver Olav, your fruit on me. Right? Can I do that? Sure. Reuven can make Shimon's bananas asur on Reuven. Right? Your fruit are asur to me. Hoyel v'adam oise Peres Chaver Olav, something which I cannot do by Hekdesh. I can't just walk over to your bananas and make it Hekdesh. It's not mine. So, clearly, Nedarim work differently. Nedarim are broader. And therefore, oyser nami davar shloi b'daylam olav. Likewise, I can apply a kainam to even something which doesn't yet exist, as long as I'm making it asra myself. Right? I can take something which doesn't yet exist and say it's asra on me. You know, the future income, whatever, will be asra on me. Right? It doesn't have to be totally here and totally mine. The Ran says, Davar Shelo Be'Olam is like something which doesn't yet belong to me, something which is like yours, comparable to something which is yours. Just like I can take something which is yours, something which is not in my hands, and make it asur on me. Likewise, I can take something which will come in the future and make it asur on me. A similar idea. Bottom line is, I'm committing to keeping away from that thing. And that explains why the Isha could do the same. Even though the income doesn't yet exist, she can make it asur on her husband. Amalei Abayi, what do you mean? You compare... How can you compare the two things? You see, you're comparing situations where, you know, there's one chesaron, one deficiency. That can work. So the two examples you cited were like this. Either the item doesn't belong to me, it's your banana, but ultimately I'm making an asur on me. So it's really only once removed. The item is not mine, but the isur is me. And you compare it to where there too there's only one deficiency. The item doesn't yet exist, but it's asur on me. Okay, but now we're taking it a step further. We're stretching it. And want to include even cases where we have two deficiencies. What is the Isha doing? She's taking something which doesn't yet exist, that's number one chesaron, and making an asur on somebody else, on her husband. That's a double chesaron. You have no source for that. I can understand how, you know, a person could say, I can say, your fruit is asur to me. I can do that. Because it's only one step down, only one chesaron. Shari adam oise peros v'chaveri, just like I can take my fruit and make it asur on you. It's one up and one down. It's on you, which is one down. It's removed. I have no control over you, but it's just one chesaron because it's really my fruit. So it's one up, one down. So one chesaron works. One deficiency works. But a case which has two deficiencies, elo yeser davar shelo bolo elam al chaver, but how can a person take something which A, doesn't yet exist, that's one deficiency, and number two, I'm making an asur on somebody else, a double deficiency. You can't do that. Just like sharei ein adam oyser peres chaver al chaver. Just like you can't walk over to somebody else and say, you know, your bananas are also to you. I have no right to do that. It's a doubly removed equation. A double chesaron, a double deficiency. That's exactly what the Isha is trying to do here. You have no substantiation for that. So back to the kasha, how can the Isha do it? How can she affect Isra on post-divorce income? A situation which doesn't yet exist. Ella Marav Huna by Rav Yeshua. The answer is like this: by Meres, Yikatsu Yodai LaAseim. That when the Mishnah speaks about an isha making her income also to her husband, even pertaining to a future status, post-divorce status, it's because she said, my hands, which are here now, which are tangible, should become kaddish to their maker, to Hashem. The yodaim ha'isnu bo'elim, because the hands are here. The source of the income, the hands that produce the income are here. It's something tangible. It's not davar shelo bo'elim. And therefore it works. Asks the Gemara, what do you mean? V'chi amra hachi, kacha? So even by saying that, how does that work? How does that make it asur? V'meshabdom yodeh l'baal. You see, even if you can be magdir something which doesn't yet exist, right now, these hands that she's pointed to are her husband's. They belong. They're meshubah to the husband. They're meshubah to the mas yodayim. She's committed. She's obligated to use these hands to benefit her husband, to bring in income. So how would it work? Even if she says these hands should be asur, you know, whatever they produce should be asur b'kainam, the hands currently are certainly committed to her husband. And so the Gemara, the Amra, because she said the chimagash, I want his hands to be asur when, you know, I divorce. Well, how does that help us? Hashtam miyas lemagash. Right now she's not yet divorced. And how do you know that it would work? In her current situation, these hands are meshubat. Right? And we're working with the concept that, you know, you can't really be magdish dovah shleba loyalim. That's Shmuel's shita. Right? So the answer was, well, the hands are here. Well, the hands now belong to the husband. Well, the hands after divorce. That's a non-existing situation. Dovah shleba loyalim. How does that work? Okay, to be continued. So bottom line is like this. We had a stira in that Mishnah regarding Truma and Maser. Who owns the Truma? Who owns the Maser? The Taibas Hano interest that he has. Is that considered the moment to indicate ownership by the farmer or not? We seem to have a stira. In case one, he made Aser. All Kayhanim and Levim on his Truma and Maser. Mishnah says they can go ahead and take. It's not really his. Then we say, well, these specific Kohanim and Levim are Aser, they cannot take. Which indicates that he does own the material. First we figure it's Machlekes Tanoim. Then Rabbi says, look, maybe Teva Sanoa is Mamin. But when he makes it Aser on everybody, that's pulling the string a bit too hard. A bit too far. Because in that case, he disabled the Truma. Nobody can take it. He made it Hefka. He relinquished any interest, any ownership, in which case that in itself allows them to come take it. We have case one in the Mishnah, which he made all types of isurim against relatives. No hafara applies there. Koinim shani oisa al picha, my husband, you can't take from me. We have three shittas. Tanakama says, don't worry about it. It's all his anyways. His shibud overrides her nether. Rekiva says, ha'adafa is a concern, the extras, which doesn't really belong to him. Therefore, you should do hafara. Rabbi Yechim Nuri says, I'm not concerned about the actual income right now, or even the ha'adafa, but I am concerned about future, after gerushin. Therefore, do hafara now to address that possible scenario. Shmuel seemed to paskin like that, which would indicate you can affect something down the line on davar shleba lo'olam, post-divorce. And we seem to have Shmuel telling us otherwise, and Ksubos, you can't be magdish, davar shleba lo'olam. The Gemara figured out, kainamas work differently. Well, then the Gemara said, even that's a bit too much. Apparently she said, the hands will be asur. Well, again, the hands right now are sort of meshubah to him. Well, no, the hands after gerushin. Well, that doesn't yet exist. How does that work? We left it off right there. We'll continue Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. All the best to you and Hatzalach Rabbah.